What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another pay-per-view point edition of the Smark Out Moment Smack Talk podcast. I am your host, as always, Tony Mango, and this edition is going to be the breakdown of the 2017 Backlash pay-per-view from the SmackDown brand that just happened about like a half an hour ago or so from when I'm recording this. And I have to preface this ahead of time by saying that it's only myself tonight, and I have a lot of stuff going on at the moment. It's family members in the hospital and stuff like that. So I am going to keep this rather short and simple, despite the fact that there was a lot to talk about tonight. I promise I'll be trying to expand on that and try to incorporate our talk a little bit about that in like this upcoming edition of the mailbag and everything like that. So it's not that short edition is because there's nothing to talk about. There's plenty to talk about, but I'm going to kind of speed through a little bit of some stuff here, more than I normally would even try to. But nonetheless, let's still try to break things down as much as we can. And the pre-show is entirely skippable for the most part. It was James Ellsworth plugging the women's match for later on, not really accomplishing all that much. Eric Rowan doing a less intense version of his interruption and creepy moment kind of stuff than he did on Talking Smack. Dolph Ziggler saying, I'm going to beat Shinsuke Nakamura. And then we had our pre-show kickoff match, which was Aiden English versus Ty Dillinger. And Aiden English is now going by the nickname The Drama King, which is pretty interesting. It's a way to kind of incorporate a little bit into his character without changing it all that much. But it's not going to be the saving grace for his career or anything like that, especially because he lost this match to Ty Dillinger, which makes sense because Ty Dillinger is the more, I wouldn't say worthwhile, that's kind of mean, but he's the guy who is the newer person. He's got a little bit more of an upside to him right now. Aiden English has to kind of work his way back up, so it makes sense. And Aiden English is doing a crybaby gimmick, so of course he's going to lose, right? Decent match, not anything that if you skipped, you need to go really go back and watch, which is pretty typical for any kind of pre-show stuff. If you did catch the pre-show, then you would know ahead of time that Shinsuke Nakamura versus Dolph Ziggler was the match that they were going to be kicking off with. Many people didn't watch the pre-show, so that's why they were kind of surprised about that, but that makes sense to why they would do that, because it kind of helps evenly distribute the way that they wanted to make the important matches happen throughout the card, so I wasn't opposed to that. Now, I will have to say here, it was a little bit disappointing. I thought that this could have been the match of the year, and it just wasn't. I mean, there were two pay-per-view matches last night on NXT TakeOver Chicago that I think beat this out as far as even just pay-per-view match of the year, let alone working in with the TV matches of the year, too. So, Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate, and then the NXT Tag Team Ladder Match, I think that those two surpassed Ziggler Nakamura. I will have to say, though, just because of the fact that this was not match of the year quality doesn't mean that it wasn't a good match. I still enjoyed the match quite a bit. It wasn't the best match of the night, even. That's kind of weird. But I think that they have shown that they've got a little bit of chemistry together and that they can plot out a really good match. So I'm hoping that this is one of those scenarios where they were just sort of, you know, keeping it simple, not wanting the, this is a crude way of saying it, but not wanting to blow their load too quickly, and that they kind of want to save a little bit of this for Money in the Bank or SummerSlam or whatever the next encounter is that they're going to be going forward with. The good thing is that Nakamura has now had a match, so now we can actually get him to wrestle on SmackDown, and it's going to be a little bit easier for this feud to flow because we're not going to have to rely on Nakamura not being able to spar verbally with Dolph Ziggler. So maybe we're going to get some tag team matches, maybe we're going to get Nakamura beating Aiden English and such like that, but I don't know. I still think that there's a future behind this. I don't think that people should be too down on it just because it didn't quite meet those crazy high expectations that most of us, if not all of us, kind of had going forward for this. Even better than that match, though, surprisingly, was the SmackDown Tag Team Championship match. The Usos retain against Breezango, but by far the stars here were Breezango. I mean, the stupid gimmicks that they did and how they made this a silly fun match were just so good. Like, they had a situation in here that I never would have thought would have been something that I would have written down as like, well, you know, by the end of the year, this is going to be one of my favorite things, which was Tyler Breeze in a janitor costume with a mop, and then Tyler Breeze in a women's dress, and doing stupid stuff like slowly rolling around the ring to avoid getting a splash. Where, funny enough, even when it comes to the dress, one of the Usos throws it, lands on JBL's face, and he goes, oh, last time that happened, I paid for it. Stupid stuff like that can really be hilarious during a match. And the crowd eating up the whole thing with the mop and just being like, the boos that they gave for the mop were bigger than the boos that they gave for some of the heels throughout this night, which was kind of crazy. I thought that this was a great showing for Breezango. They now actually seem like they could be going somewhere. They've got their personalities been showing a little bit more. They looked credible, oddly enough, in doing this weird sort of odd gimmicky match. And I kind of want to see a rematch. So I was leaning a little bit towards wanting DIY to go up to SmackDown. Now we know that DIY doesn't exist anymore. And I kind of feel like, well, at least Breezango is meeting, they're meeting their qualifications here. And they're actually surpassing them a little bit. So maybe we don't need DIY. Maybe we've got Breezango and American Alpha and the New Day. And that's good for the babyface tag teams. I'm kind of down with it right now. That was easily one of my favorite aspects of this whole night, but unfortunately it went downhill a little bit with Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin, which, it wasn't bad, but I don't know. I mean, it didn't really do much for me. And I like Sami Zayn, and I like Baron Corbin, so I really wanted these two to have a really good match, and I think that there's still potential that they could, but just something was off, and maybe I was distracted a little bit, maybe it was the placement of the card or something. I don't know. But I really just didn't connect all that much with this. I don't really remember anything that happened in it, oddly enough. So, Sami Zayn wins. That was surprising. It wasn't the biggest shock of the night, by far. But I just sort of think of this as like a wash. It almost didn't even happen, as far as I'm concerned. Which is kind of a shame, because I really like both those guys. So, hopefully, with Money in the Bank, they kind of get a little bit more steam. But maybe that's just going to be something that we're going to have to eat as far as, like, the next couple of weeks with, like, kind of a lackluster feud or something. But I don't know. We shall see what's in store for these people. Because now my whole idea of who was going to win Money in the Bank, it's kind of out the window. But we're going to get to that in a little bit. First things first, we have to go through the next couple of matches. And this, unfortunately, was another downtrod. Six women tag team match, which I hate it when the women's match is my least favorite part of the night, because it always makes it seem like I'm purposely anti the women's match. But that's not the case. I swear to God, it's not the case. This was just a situation where I feel like this was a SmackDown secondary main event. This was not good enough for a pay-per-view. Nothing changed here from what the beginning of this feud was to what it's going to be 2 days from now on SmackDown. The welcoming committee formed together. They don't like Charlotte. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense why they form, but whatever. Let's just go with it. Charlotte starts teaming up a little bit with Naomi and Becky, but they don't quite get along, and, you know, so-and-so said this, and Charlotte's not quite being a team player and all that other kind of crap. And then it seems like that's the story going forward is, can they win? No. No, they can't. Natalya beats Becky. She makes her tap out. Now what? Are we going to get Charlotte on SmackDown saying, we would have won that match if it wasn't for Becky, and Becky going, hey, you didn't have my back, and that's why we didn't win. And then Naomi going, well, we need to stick together to fight these people because we're going to have another 3-on-3 match tonight. Or I'm going to need the two of you in my corner because I'm going to fight Tamina or something like that. I don't care. That sucks. It's not an engaging storyline. Where's the women's championship involved in this? This is the only title that wasn't defended tonight. And I really would have rather preferred just Naomi against Natalya or Naomi against Tamina. Or Naomi against Charlotte again, or, you know, like any kind of scenario like that. I'm really just not that interested in it. So I hope that they don't keep this going all that long, because I really don't see much of a future to it. And whatever they end it with, if it's Charlotte retaining her heel status, or making a terrible babyface turn, or I don't know what their end game is. They're going to have to work hard to convince me that it was worth it, because so far, not working. In particular, there was this one spot in the night where Naomi was trying to get the crowd to do the whole glow, 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 and they wanted nothing of it. And this is a good crowd for the most part. They only didn't give a shit about pretty much the Luke Harper and Eric Rowan match. Everything else they were sort of getting into. They were really behind the mop thing. They were really behind Nakamura. They were behind Sami Zayn. They were really behind Owens and Styles, etc. They just did not want to do the glow chant. Not feeling the glow. And we got to talk about Becky Lynch's hair, because Jesus Christ, that what is going on with Becky Lynch's hair? She better not do that again. Silent Wind of Doom, I think is what it was, had said that their friend thought she was Rufio from Hook. And I incorporated that in the Bleacher Report article, by the way, because I thought it was really good. And that was the first thing that I had thought of, too. I was just kind of like, she looks familiar. And I thought 80s, like that 80s hairstyle. But as soon as that was brought up with Rufio, I'm like, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of fucking Rufio. So that is my biggest takeaway for this. Rufio and nobody feeling the glow, and it sucks. Not the biggest takeaway when it comes to the representation of the women's division, because the women that are in this match are better than this. That's the thing that sucks about this. But we do have good news as far as the United States Championship match, because that was a hell of a match between Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. The best match of the night, by far as I'm concerned. And this was great from start to finish, especially the finish in my mind, because I really hate it when pay-per-view matches end in a countout or a disqualification. But this worked so well. It told the story throughout the whole match of AJ Styles having his bum knee and Kevin Owens going after it looked vicious. And Styles not being able to make that 10 count is the perfect reason to continue this feud going forward. Styles is the type of guy that doesn't really need to be protected in the same sense as like a Braun Strowman, where as soon as the monster mystique is gone, they need to figure out something else to do because they're so heavily invested in the idea of being unbeaten or unstoppable. Styles is not that type of a character, but he is the type of a character where you kind of look at him as he should pretty much win every match that he's in because he's that good in the ring. Well, if Kevin Owens does something dastardly like this whole idea of tying up his foot in the thing, it's not proving that Kevin Owens is better than him. It's just proving that Kevin Owens had the slightest edge as far as a tactical strategy. And that could be the difference maker. And that gets AJ Styles to come out there and go, I want another shot. No one's going, fuck no, I barely retained my title at that point. And somehow or another, they're going to get back into the swing of things. And they're going to fight each other again. And it's going to be as good of a match, if not a better one, in the future. So I loved this segment a lot. I'm glad that Kevin Owens retained the title because I think that he should have. And now I'm actually not too sure about where they're going to go with AJ Styles because I thought at first he was going to go and just kind of hover around the mid-card for a little bit. But based off of something that happened a little bit later on, I don't know. Maybe he's going to be a little bit more into the main event or so. And maybe the Kevin Owens feud isn't going to last like super long, but at the very least, it's going to last for one more match, we know that, or else it would have just been a definitive ending for this, right? So I am very interested to see what that next match has in store for us, because I really am a big fan of both these guys, and I love the segment, top to bottom. And then again, we got to go to a little down slump with Luke Harper versus Eric Rowan, which I was really rooting for these guys, because I, again, just same thing with the Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin. I like them both to a certain extent, and I want to see them take that next step forward, but this wasn't doing it. Some people in the chat on Mega Maniacs were saying that it was pretty good, it was a fun big man match or whatever. I thought it was boring. And I was really rooting for this to be some kind of like balls-to-wall action, big man brawl type of kind of thing. And it just sort of felt like it was going through the motions a little bit. And Luke Harper's finish at the end there, what the hell was that? He wins with like a, it was supposed to be a clothesline, but it seemed more like he just kind of like punched him a little bit. That was awkward. I didn't like this at all. And I think that part of the reason behind it is, even though I've been watching Talking Smack, and I watched the pre-show, Not a whole lot of people watch that stuff. So not a whole lot of people are interested in this Eric Rowan thing. And I can't blame them. The pre-show is pretty skippable. Talking smack is kind of one of those superfluous type of things. It's good, but if you're going to get to the point where you're on, like, WWE Overload, you're going to watch Raw, and then you're going to watch SmackDown, and then you're going to start cutting things. A lot of people don't even watch Raw and SmackDown. A lot of people don't even watch either of them at this point. But I can see why people don't watch Talking Smack, even though I think it's good. Same thing with 205 Live. And Eric Rowan is really not being helped by the people not knowing what the hell is going on with his character right now. He needs to do this kind of stuff on SmackDown. That way, people might actually get invested with it. You get more people invested in it, the crowd suddenly stops sitting on their hands, and they actually start paying attention. So I think that that hurt this quite a bit. And even though I do think that there's a little bit more of a future between these two facing off, they're going to have to work harder now. Because now you've already had your pay-per-view match. Where do you go from here? Does Eric Rowan just attack Luke Harper and you're just going to keep this like generic feud going on? Nobody's going to really care about that. You got to add some kind of wrinkle to the mix. Whether or not WWE does that, we'll figure that out over the next couple of weeks or so. But I think both these guys are just going to be thrown into the Money in the Bank, and there's not going to be that much to capitalize on, and then it's going to fade into obscurity, and that kind of sucks. And last, but certainly not least, we've got the WWE Championship match between Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal is your new WWE champion. What the fuck is going on with 2017, everybody? This is insane. We thought it was crazy enough that Jinder Mahal got a title shot. Now he's officially in the record books as being on par with people like Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, surpassing the people that didn't quite get to that level, like Razor Ramon and Mr. Perfect and Ted DiBiase and Roddy Piper and Rick Rude. And those guys didn't win a WWE championship. Jinder Mahal did. That's insane. But it's interesting. You know, we've been talking about how, you know, it's every once in a while, it's good to shake things up. And what's a better way to do that than to have somebody who is coming out of left field win the top prize in the entire company? It's hard to do something that's going to create as much of buzz as that. Jinder Mahal, I don't know if he's the right guy to have done that with, but nobody saw this one coming. Not until, you know, yesterday, the day before, when all the predictions started coming out, it was like, hey, everybody, the betting odds are a little bit in Jinder Mahal's favor. It might actually happen. Totally nuts. Completely just, I did not see this actually, the trigger actually being pulled. I thought that this would end up being, like, a good showing for Jinder Mahal, and then Randy Orton would end up getting the win in the end. I actually wrote up the majority of my Bleacher Report slide talking about, hey, you know what? It was a losing effort for Jinder Mahal, but he ended up taking a big step in his career, and this is going to be only an upswing for him and whatever like that. Then he ends up winning, and I'm like, oh, there goes those fucking paragraphs. I got to start all over again and get that done and whatever. Where they go from here, I don't know. I mean, we could get something as simple as Randy Orton winning the title again on SmackDown this week. We could get him winning the title back at Money in the Bank. We could get Jinder Mahal holding the title until SummerSlam. I don't know, but I had thought that it was a guarantee that Rusev would be challenging Randy Orton for the title at Money in the Bank. Now that's not really in the running all that much, because even if Jinder Mahal loses it to Randy Orton on SmackDown this week, you're going to have to think that they'll probably fight again at the next pay-per-view, because it's June, what is it, June like 18th or something like that, I think. Let me double check that ahead of time before I lose track of what my time frame is here. June 18th. Yeah, I'm correct about that. So they only have a couple of weeks or so before they would have to do that. That could be another rematch scenario. Maybe Rusev is putting the Money in the Bank instead or something, and that's why they cut that whole segment of him addressing that future title shot and stuff, because he's not going to get it. Maybe AJ Styles is the next champion, not Randy Orton. Maybe Sami Zayn is the one that beat Jinder Mahal. Baron Corbin, I thought, was going to be feuding with Randy Orton going forward. Maybe it's not going to be for the title. There's a whole lot of interesting ways that they could take this. And at the very least, that makes me kind of want to tune into SmackDown. I'd be doing it anyway, but that kind of makes me curious to see where they're going to go from here. So Jinder Mahal is their fucking champion. What do I say about it? I don't know. It could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. It could be one of those things that we look back on and we're like, why the hell did they decide to do this? Or it could be the start of a brand new major player's career, you know? But that is Backlash 2017 from my perspective, everybody. We're going to have a little bit of time to kind of dwell on this over the next few days. So whatever other stories come out with the hot tags and the rest hold and the mailbag and, well, nothing is really going to come up when it comes to the Sexy Superstars tournament, but the finals for that's coming up soon. So those are the four things that you're going to be hearing from me next on. So make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel and hit that little bell notification icon to make sure that you get alerts whenever I post this kind of stuff up. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well, and leave your comments below and tell me what you thought of Backlash 2017. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been another Smarkout Moment, and I am being counted out.